intersections are those times when we have multiple choices for the direction that we will take, and then we have to decide. This podcast will explore the many intersections in people's lives. Some are pleasant, others are hair-raising, all are important. I'm Brett Dickerson, your host. Today I'm visiting with Joe Dorman. Many of you might recognize that name. He was a longtime legislator in the Oklahoma legislature. Notice that I said those two words the correct way. Until 2014, and then in 2014, he ran for governor, representing the Democratic Party, running against Mary Fallon in that election. Now, he lost that election, but Joe, you... ran for governor in 2014. Your supporters thought you had a really good shot at that, and as a matter of fact, in the summer, that summer leading up to that, you were actually polling neck and neck with the incumbent governor, were you not?
That is correct. When the numbers came out, the best numbers that really showed the traction that people started believing was a poll that came out of a Washington, D.C. firm, and it actually was a conservative-leaning polling group, mm-hmm. and it showed there was a five-point difference. It was 45 to 40.
Okay.
And so when those numbers broke, people really started to pay attention, and our numbers internally showed it was 43 to 41 3 weeks out. And the negative commercials began on TV. There were black and white commercials morphing me into the president, and that just killed me with a certain segment of the electorate. So 41% ended up being the number I got on election day.
Okay. 41% of those who voted. Now what was the turnout number on that?
The turnout actually was awful in 2014.
Right.
It was the worst recorded turnout in state history, which a little bit of a blow to the ego that more people weren't willing to go to the polls. It was disappointing, but a lot of that went to the negative campaigning, the voter suppression, constantly telling people I didn't have a chance to win, and people believe that. Well,
Right. If
the numbers would have been the same as what we saw in 2010, it would have been neck and neck. There were 200,000 fewer voters in 2014 than there were in 2010, and
wow.
I only lost by 122,000 votes.
So
it's frustrating to know that a large
yes.
segment of those people that just didn't go because they didn't think I had a chance of winning,
right.
they would have leaned towards me. So
it
could have easily... come down to the wire.
Right. Yeah. 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 It could. It. You know. It sounds like it. What were some of the other significant numbers from that election, Joe?
Well, when you look at the numbers compared to the governor's election rate versus reelection rate,
right.
she had the third worst drop in the nation. So we had a significant message there where the people, the percentage that voted for her in 2010, they didn't turn around and vote for her. She only got 55.8%.
Wow.
There were two independents in the race, which people often forget, that pulled a certain percentage. And so the numbers dropped significantly. There was one incumbent Republican governor who was defeated. I believe it was out in Pennsylvania. And then I think Idaho's governor had a worse rate from election to reelection, and then Governor Fallon's. So we were very successful with the limited dollars we had. I had one-third of the dollars that the governor had. I had one-third of the dollars that Jerry Askins had running against her in 2010. If we could have kept up financially, there's no telling what could have happened.
Wow, one-third.
One-third. I had $1.6 million on my campaign compared to the over $4 million that the governor had. Now, I started late. I got involved in the campaign December 17th of 2013.
Okay.
There was no support from the National Democratic Party. Did not receive a penny from them.
Ever?
Ever. Throughout the entire campaign, not one penny.
Why not?
They said I got into the race too late, and they didn't think that I could develop the traction. Whereas you look at what happened in Texas with Wendy Davis, I outperformed Wendy Davis by 2 points, and they were dumping money hand over fist down there. So
you outperformed her.
Percentage-wise, I outperformed Wendy Davis by 2 points.
Oh, wow.
And that was an open seat, too. It wasn't
it was
running
open,
against
yeah.
an incumbent.
An incumbent, yeah. The Democratic Party gave you
Zero.
Zero money.
Nationally. The state Democratic Party did what they could.
Right.
But I had to help them raise money to have the resources to do what they needed for the campaigns around the state.
Right.
And so essentially I was raising money for them to help me out. So it was difficult. And I had to take time off from my own fundraising to help them out. But it was worth the sacrifice on that because we knew they needed the help and we knew it was going to go to a good benefit.
It just seems to me that the Democratic Party in Oklahoma has had a very hard time really fully embracing the fact that it at least should be the opposition party. You'll stand up and run for office and say some things, and I go, boy, Joe sure is mad about something, and then Scott Inman will stand up and, like, you know, say something, and it'll just sound like just him. So people go, boy, he sure is mad about something. And then it just goes around, around, around. It seems like to me that there's just not, the Democratic Party's had a hard time really coalescing as the opposition party so that people in Oklahoma are actually hearing one message that things, you know, the typical opposition party message is the guys in charge are screwing it up. And I'm hearing individuals saying that sometimes, but I don't hear the Democratic Party doing that very much. Do you think that the Democratic Party suffers from all of those years of being the majority party? Do you think it's just hard for them to make that shift?
It does, and it's not just that. It's suffering from trying to do things the way we've always done it. We have a new leadership team with Mark Hammonds as the chair.
Yeah.
And they're doing a great job trying to build upon the successes. Of course, Cindy Munson's race in Oklahoma City was a tremendous win for the boost in morale. And it shows that when we run the races the right way, we do get the message out there, and people do agree with the majority of the message with the Democratic Party, supporting blue-collar principles, trying to provide access to health care, a quality public education. These are messages that the general public wants to hear. And it has been tough for the Democratic Party to adjust to that with some of the individuals. Part of it's finances. The Democratic Party in Oklahoma only has two major donors. And people are shocked by that. And you would think with the long history of former elected officials, people who have done well and are affluent, they are not giving back the way they should or what we see with national people. And we have one person in particular that as a former officer in the Democratic Party, a former statewide elected official, doesn't give a penny to the state party but contributes nationally. So it's disappointing to not see that same level of support because if we had it, I think we would be doing far better. And it has left the candidates like myself in a lurch. When you see the state legislative candidates, the party sometimes in the past has been a hindrance more than a help. Because the party asks for money from the candidates rather than giving money to them because they've had such a tough time fundraising. So I do believe it's going to get better. We're starting to see this younger generation that's not as active in party politics but believes in the message and believes in the principles. And when you see the difference in the two parties, you see a lot of this younger generation identify more with Democrats, and they support the candidates, and they will support certain causes. Mm-hmm. We've got to try and encourage more people to get active and focus their efforts in the right areas and elect good people. And sometimes we're going to see good people on their side of the aisle. We need to look at who the best candidate will be and make sure that they go out there and we hold them accountable. And that too often does not happen. Once an incumbent gets elected, they tend to work more towards keeping their seat than representing the people. And
now,
that's
Joe,
disappointing.
It is disappointing. And Bernie Sanders, so far, nationally, almost all his money have been small donors. Is that maybe a possibility for Oklahoma, for the Democratic Party in Oklahoma? Are they suffering a little bit from being oriented to just going after big donors? And like you said, now there's only like two big donors in the state, which also, I wonder from that fact, if big donors just go after where the power is. The big donors tend to just follow whatever party's in power. Okay, we got it. pay these guys to play ball with us and whatever. Is that kind of what goes on?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we saw a very prominent Democrat in Oklahoma City who you would have thought would wind up with me, but instead held a fundraiser for Governor Fallon. And that gets disappointing when you see that they're not willing to stand by the ideas that they espouse each week. Instead, they go where the power is, and they want to protect their little fiefdom.
Yeah, so that just looked like the smart move on their part.
Right? Absolutely, and that's
going to bet on the horse that'll probably win.
Yeah, right? And no one gave me any credit in that race, and then I proved them somewhat wrong at the end and did far better than most people expected. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expected to break 30% by most experts early on,
right,
and then ended up going over 40%. Mm-hmm. So
it wasn't a runaway election by any
it definitely
by
wasn't.
Any measure, was it?
No, it wasn't. Right. And you could tell going down to the wire the fierceness in the campaign. Mm-hmm. Governor out on the trail,
right,
working hard, and we'd see each other at several different events, and we've still remained friends.
Sure.
We may disagree on policy. Definitely disagree on a lot of policies, but you have to work together. You have to have that ability to sit down and disagree, but try and find compromise on issues and try and move the state forward. And I wish more elected officials would take that attitude. And that's one of the things with the electorate, too, that does bother me. We see far too many people that if a candidate doesn't agree with their one issue, or
right,
if they disagree with a few issues, well, then they decide, well, I'm just not going to vote. Well, that does no one any good, because it's better to get something than nothing. And oftentimes when people don't get out to vote, then they're getting what they've asked for, and that's nothing.
Yeah.
In agreement with the one that wins.
And if you only have 20 to 30% of the state electing the officials, that's really not democracy, is it?
That's really not. We had 800,000 people vote in the governor's race. And when you think about it, we have about 2 million voters in Oklahoma. it's disappointing that more people don't get involved in the process and vote in an informed manner, learn about the candidates.
What do you think went right about your campaign, and what do you want to do better if there's a next one?
I wish people could listen to my speech on election night that I delivered, because one of my friends said it was the worst concession speech he's ever heard, because it didn't sound like I conceded a single thing. Because in truth, we won on a lot of the issues. We brought forth the message on education. Mm-hmm. Governor Fallon said she was going to work for teacher pay raises. We haven't seen that happen, but we heard it out of her mouth. We heard a difference in education. She changed her views on testing policies midstream. Of course, the Common Core issue, I had problems with that. My mom was a special needs teaching mm-hmm. assistant, and I mm-hmm. saw how it boxed in those special needs students and
right.
didn't provide the avenues that they needed to succeed.
Right.
There were problems with that, and we saw... the term was flip-flop in the election, but we saw the governor come around to the right side on a lot of those issues. Now, mm-hmm. we haven't seen the policies fall into place the way I wish they would, but I do believe that we do have some good opportunities. I believe the campaign inspired people to get involved. I still have people coming up to me at least once a week thanking me for running and making a difference. One person came up to me at a restaurant last week and thanked me for getting her college-aged child interested in politics. So I know I was successful there, that we inspired people to pay attention and get active.
Okay, now let me ask you now, are you going to run again?
I am planning on running again. Now, the question is if it will be for that office. I am not going to make a decision until next year. I want to sit down with my family again, decide if it's the right thing. I told people in the last election, you should only run for office if you feel you can do a better job than anyone else that's in the race.
Right.
And I honestly want to wait and see if there is someone else that gets in the race who might do a better job than mm-hmm. me. As I know that we have a lot of good people out there, but oftentimes those people do not want to get involved in politics because
right.
of the time commitments, the scrutiny, just the overall ridiculousness that we see at the Capitol building.
Mm-hmm.
I want to visit with the people who are interested and see if there might be someone who could do a better job. And if not, I will run again. But I am planning on serving in mm-hmm. the public sector, and I want to stay active and try and help people out.
So So we're going to give you about a year, and then you will announce what you've decided to run for. Maybe governor, may not. Maybe some other part of state government, right?
That's right. No matter what, I want to continue serving. The job I have right now, it's been a wonderful opportunity to help people who are in need and make a difference in their lives. And I'm continuing to do that, writing my columns, trying to provide information and encourage people to stay active. Mm-hmm. So no matter what, I want to remain a positive influence. And I feel I could do that best in some office or position, whether it be elected or appointed. Mm-hmm. But I do want to keep that part of my life in place where I am able to help people out.
Now, there was one issue that came up out of the campaign that I thought was pretty interesting. Democrats argued with each other about just how progressive you were. Matter of fact, a guy out in California that has a blog, he said, I spoke to half a dozen progressives I know in Oklahoma. Every one of them agreed that the only way Dorman could be viewed as progressive, quotes, would be in comparison to Fallon. And then he, you know, said some other things. And then he said, but what's important here is that the word progressive means something, and Dorman's not it. Okay, so I wanted to read that to you so you could just kind of comment on that. Are you a progressive?
The way I view it, especially on issues like that, people are entitled to their own opinions. And yeah, compared to the governor, absolutely. I am far more progressive than she is. Mm-hmm. When you look at the service I had in the legislature, I represented my district. Mm-hmm. And there were some issues that I didn't agree wholeheartedly on that I voted the way that I knew my district would want. There were some of those issues like House Bill 1804, the immigration laws. I didn't agree with that. I voted for it, but I worked to try and improve it. And I do think it has a lot of flaws and it needs to be changed. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of bills like that that went through under a Republican-controlled legislature that people, I don't think they understood the entire aspect of that legislation. I feel that on issues like Medicaid expansion, I certainly supported that. I said that would be my first act as governor to make sure we implemented that to help people have access to affordable health care. Education issues, I wanted to make sure that we had fully funded public education as best we could to provide for those students, to give them opportunities. I think government needs to stay out of people's lives. There are a lot of things that have been decided at the federal level the state has no involvement in and shouldn't get involved with. So on specific issues, yes, I'm pro-life. I'm pro-Second Amendment. That's the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. I was raised that guns are used for hunting and that they are a tool.
Sure.
People disagree with that, and they're entitled to their opinion, and I certainly had mine.
Mm-hmm. When did you first go to work at the Capitol? You actually worked at the Capitol before you ran for an office, didn't you?
That's true. Starting back a little bit before that, I first got interested in politics because I paged for the state Senate. Any of your listeners who have connections with any high school students who are interested in politics, mm-hmm. they need to talk to their senators and representatives and check out the PAGE program. And I'll get to that a little bit more in detail. But that experience, my junior year paging for the state Senate, really changed my life and my perspective. Mm. So
it was life-changing.
It was. It was amazing. Just that 1 week there at the Capitol,
wow!
I knew I wanted to get involved in public service.
You got it. I have to be in this place. I
got
to come here and do this.
Yeah. And I won that through a 4-H award.
Yeah.
My Senator Ray Giles provided that opportunity for me to go up there. And it was just an amazing experience. And so I got back home and got involved in some local issues. It used to be against the law to dance in my hometown. There was a city ordinance that prevented dancing. And no, Footloose isn't based on my life story, but
no, it's actually Elmore City.
It is Elmore City. Very good.
I used to live in Maysville, so that's the reason why I know about
it. But there are several of those little communities in that area down there that had passed bans on dancing.
Yeah.
And it was due to religious leaders being on city councils. So that's... We still see some of those issues come about in politics, but we decided we wanted to have our prom our senior year in Rush Springs because one of my classmates my junior year had fallen asleep driving home and wrecked his car. He was fine. He hadn't been drinking, just fell asleep. But we decided we wanted to have the prom in town. Mm-hmm. City council would not repeal the ordinance. We found out our ag barn, the FFA building, was outside the city limits. We were going to have it there. The city council had decided they were going to annex the Ag Barn to keep us from having our prom. That one thing there probably got me directed into politics more than anything else, when I saw that elected officials would do that to their constituents. Our parents got involved and kept that from happening. We got to have our prom. I majored in political science, went to Oklahoma State University, got active in student government and Young Democrats. I was the chair of the Student Senate and the national parliamentarian for the Young Democrats of America. When I graduated, I actually delayed my graduation an extra year so I could graduate in an election cycle and work on campaigns. Through that, I met the Speaker of the House, and he encouraged me to apply for a job at the Capitol. The only job that was open that I had the qualifications to do was a mail clerk, which is the lowest rung you can get on the ladder. And I had the opportunity to do that for 2 years, and then was moved to the research staff and then the executive staff. And through those promotions, I got to work with the PAGE program again and created the mock legislative component with some of the other staffers, where we put this program in place where the students would get to write their own bill and debate on the floor of the House and the Senate and argue like senators and representatives. Mm-hmm. And I've had several that have come back to me and said that that really influenced them to get more active in politics.
So that was a part of the PAGE program.
That was a part of the PAGE program. Yeah. So it came full circle where I got to
kind
get back
model,
to that program.
Kind of a model legislature kind of model there.
And
yeah.
I was active in the Oklahoma Intercollegiate Legislature in college, and all of that worked to focus me towards the legislature. So I knew I wanted to run for the House of Representatives at some point. My representative, Jim Glover, had served 26 years, was going to term out in 2004, but decided to leave one term early because of health reasons. Mm-hmm. So that sped up my plans because he didn't tell me he was going to retire.
So you're on executive staff. You're on the executive staff. You see this opening coming up. You decide you're going to shift from being a staffer to an elected official.
That's right. And they made me quit. The boss there said it would be a conflict of interest for me to work at the Capitol and also run. So I took a leap of faith. I quit my job, lived off my savings, and campaigned hard. I was predicted to finish third out of three in my primary. And through hard work, ended up winning it by 333 votes.
Wow.
And then the general election, I won by 71%, which was pretty amazing for a Democrat to win by that level in Western Oklahoma.
Right.
And I managed to hold my seat for 12 years, only having three elections. My final three terms, no one ran against me. Hmm. And then the race for governor, and it was just an amazing run. I'm thankful I had that opportunity, especially at an early age, to get active and do what early on was my life's dream, and to achieve that so young.
Is being a representative at the Oklahoma State Capitol, is that almost always more complex than people think it is?
Absolutely. People do not realize the stress and the requirements of the job when they file for office. There is so much put on your plate and so much studying. I tell the kids when I go around and visit in the schools, you're sadly mistaken if you think homework ends when you graduate. Because if you want to do your job the right way, you're going to study and you're going to know how to do the job. Mm-hmm. And with legislators, you see 2,000 bills filed each and every year. Not all of them will make it through. About 250 make it through to the governor's desk. But you're going to see several hundred come across your desk that you had better read and understand before you cast a vote on it. Because if you don't understand it, the impact of that bill will have ramifications on your people back home. And so you're accountable for that. Mm-hmm. And most people that run for office do not understand that aspect. And we really need to have better scrutiny on the people that we're electing, because there are some people at the Capitol that don't know how to read a bill, or even worse, choose not to read a bill before they vote on it.
Well, if they choose not to read a bill, where do they get information about how to vote?
A lot of times they'll get it from their friends that are the legislators that have read it, or lobbyists. Sometimes people from back home will call. When I was a legislator, I sought out input from people back home or people who were experts in the industry before I would cast a vote. And I would try and get all the perspectives.
Term limits, because you were in there when that transition occurred, weren't you?
That's correct.
What is the difference that you see between a legislature right now that has term limits and on the older model where there were no term limits?
It's been difficult because you have that institutional memory that we've lost. People that may remember something that happened that had been tried before and didn't work, mm-hmm. sometimes those ideas resurrect themselves. And the only people that remember that it didn't work now are going to be the paid staffers that are out there that are sometimes worried to say something because they don't want to lose their job, or lobbyists, but the lobbyists are going to represent their area where they've been paid.
Do you think lobbyists have a lot more sway at the Capitol now
because of all of the
new people who are over there?
Yes, because of term limits, lobbyists have much more power. And you see that with the agency heads also. You see state agencies that will run roughshod over legislators. Mm. I saw it my last term. Mm. I had them tell me that, well, you're going to be gone in a year. I appreciate your opinion, but there's not really much you can do to us. And that's
a shame.
So
when it comes to curbing excessive bureaucracy, what you're saying then is that term limits have actually allowed agencies maybe to run out there on their own without challenge.
That's exactly right, because you think about
That's really counter to what most people would think. The whole idea that Republicans sold the state on about term limits was, well, we're going to get some fresh blood in here, and we're going to tear up this bureaucracy. But what you're saying is that now that you have all of these state agencies that every state needs, but they have more experience than the legislators do, and sometimes they just basically know how to get what they want and do what they want because there are too many green people in the legislature. Is that right?
That's exactly right. It usually takes two or three terms for a legislator to really get in their skin and understand the process. And at that point, they're halfway finished.
Yeah.
And you may have them for a couple of terms in a leadership position, but they still don't have the experience. And a lot of times you have to remember these legislators work outside jobs. A quarter of the legislature will do that as a full-time job. So three-fourths of the legislators are working another area of industry.
Mm.
Sometimes they're beholden to that industry, but a lot of times it's money in their pocket and they spend more time with their job rather than their service. And so
who do term limits end up benefiting, you think, the most now? Now that we've had time to really kind of look at a track record now of term limits.
Term limits definitely benefit the business community, the lobbyists, the individuals who have a vested interest at the Capitol, who can afford to send people out to promote a message. It's a shame because we've lost a lot of good legislators out there because of term limits. Now, we have kicked out a few of the scoundrels.
Mm-hmm.
But percentage-wise, we've lost more good than we've benefited from that.
Mm. So we got the scoundrels out, but at the same time, we ended up losing good people who really knew what they were talking about.
And it's turned the campaigns into a situation where money buys the elections. And you will see some people who might think about running, but then they'll wait until the person terms out. Because why would you want to spend three or four times as much trying to beat an incumbent when 2 years later that person is termed out? So it prevents people from running probably when they should and holding those legislators accountable.
Wow.
And then we won't even get into the dark dollars and outside money that comes into the races that benefits incumbents.
And there are some dark dollars out there, aren't they?
It's far too out of control. We have so much money that goes into these elections that's never scrutinized by the Ethics Commission, mm-hmm. that never shows up on paper.
Why not?
The politicians have refused to pass laws for oversight. I tried to run an amendment several years ago to require reporting of 527s, and the bill was immediately shelved because of that amendment. We will not see the politicians pass something like that because they benefit from that as incumbents.
Yeah. So there's money out there paying for campaigns, influencing legislators that nobody really knows where it comes from, mm-hmm. right?
And you see several of the legislators will run their own 527s, run their own PACs mm-hmm. to try and build up favor with their colleagues so they can move into leadership positions. We're especially seeing it at the federal level mm-hmm. when you see the Speaker of the House have to spend weekends going around raising money to keep their leadership position just so they can make donations to their friends to buy their vote for the leadership office.
Two most important things that you've learned about people over the years.
I want to say I'm a cynical idealist, a realist that there are a lot of people out there that truly need the assistance, and they've been shortchanged in a lot of ways in life, and the legislators are supposed to be there to help improve their lives. Most of the calls I got to the Capitol, people were calling because we were their last straw. There was no other place they can go. And the most rewarding experience was being able to help someone in a position like that. So I get frustrated with people that condemn classes of people or people in certain categories. People haven't chosen to be in those positions. People are homeless on the street, suffering from mental illness, maybe unemployed. Elected officials are there to try and get them back on their feet and help them out. Generally, people are struggling to improve their lives and provide for their families. And too often you hear politicians just generalize, and especially some of the presidential candidates.
Right.
I wish our politicians would remember that. I wish our politicians would actually go out and go in a classroom, go to the workforce, see how people are living, try and live on minimum wage,
right,
and see if you can do it yourself. We have a great state here, tremendous people that really work hard. Sometimes they get a little close-minded on some issues, but generally the people in Oklahoma are good people, and I hope I have the opportunity to serve them again someday.
Joe Dorman, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Brad. This has been a lot of fun.
That concludes the interview. Thank you for listening. This podcast idea came from taking a hard look at the many intersections in my life and listening to the intersections that other people talk about in their own lives. I want to hear about your intersections. My email address is ideas@intersectionsok.com. You can also communicate with me on Twitter and Instagram at intersectionsok. Also, take a look at the website at intersectionsok.com. Steven Tyler is the producer, and I am your host, Brett Dickerson.